Welcome you to our services today. I invite you to take your Bibles and open with us to the book of Matthew chapter 14. I'm tempted to chase several little rabbits, but I'm going to not do that, I don't think. I'm still struggling with the thought. Matthew chapter 14. It all ties in, so let me chase a little one. I found the selection of the song to be unique and very fitting in a lot of different ways. Notice the change in the song, and I'm sure you do too, from the original way that it was written. As he died to make men holy, let us teach to make men free instead of let us die to make men free, which would have been the song as it would have been sung during the time of the Civil War. And our God is marching on. Nothing is going to stop. Last night, Jane and I watched The Shack and was reminded again of how short we are in our understanding of God when we try to figure out God from our perspective and refuse to pay attention to exactly what he says. And I was struck again by the part in the movie where God is describing wrath. What do you mean, wrath? There is no wrath. Sin brings its own punishment. There is no wrath from me. And I thought, well, then what is Sodom and Gomorrah? What is the flood? And what is the cross? Because the cross is God's wrath being met or being appeased with Jesus' death on the cross. So when we get away from what it says, we lose sight of what he's trying to tell us about himself. And that brings us to our lesson today. We're going to start off on Peter's walk with the feeding of the 5,000. And you may look at that and say, now what has the two got to do with each other? Well, let me show you. Matthew chapter 14 is where we're going to be. The account of the feeding of the 5,000 is in all of the accounts of the gospel. The storm that followed is in Matthew and Mark and John. And it's not recorded in Luke. And every time that it's recorded in Matthew and in Mark and in John, the storm is immediately following the feeding of the 5,000. So we start with the feeding of the 5,000 in Matthew chapter 14. And the Bible will tell us in verse 21 that it's 5,000 men, not counting women and children. In that day and time and in that culture, would the women and children have outnumbered the men? Or would the women and children have been a minority number with regard to the men? In our day and time and in our culture, we would think the women and the children would outnumber the men. But in this day and time, not certain. So the number of the people is given as 5,000. And verse 21 tells us that's just counting the men. It's not counting the women and the children. Jesus has at his disposal two fish and five loaves. We always associate loaf from our perspective. So a loaf of bread would be something about like this. And if you looked at the sandwiches that we made while we were having Cousin Week this week in Nashville, Paul and Amy bought a loaf of bread that was about this big, but it was about that wide. You could cut it in halves or thirds and make three sandwiches out of one piece of bread. The idea of loaf that is used in the Bible just simply means bread that has been baked, but what size? It was most likely no more than the size of a roll. Very likely the size of a biscuit. Made a little differently with whole grains. But it would have been what a young man would have had for his meal, for his lunch, or perhaps going to be away from home for the day, what he would have had for the day. And he would have had two pieces of fish or two fish and then five loaves or rolls, small in size. These are the two fish and five loaves that they had at Jesus' disposal. We learn from Mark that the disciples were told by Jesus, go get food for these people. And the disciples said, we'd have to work a half a year to get enough money to buy the food to feed all these people. Where are we going to find food to feed all of these people that are here? And in Mark chapter 6 and verse 38, Jesus told the disciples, you go see what you have. Go find out what you have among us. And so evidently, they went among the crowd to find out what was available among this crowd of 5,000 in order to be able to be used to feed this 5,000. And they come back with a young man who has the two fish and the five loaves. And Matthew's account and Luke's account and John's account, they just simply tell Jesus, this is all we have available for us, two fish and five loaves. So Jesus tells the disciples to have everyone to sit down. They all sat down, and as they sat down, they all eat until they are satisfied. They eat until they've had all that they want, and then they take up the 12 baskets of broken pieces. What size are the baskets? We have no idea. There are two words that are primarily used. But it's the idea of the basket that is used is the basket that would have been used to carry produce. The basket that would have been used to carry crops and carry food. They're probably of a fairly good size, but of a size that one individual would be able to carry. But from these two fish and five loaves, when all the people had eaten, they had left over 12 baskets full of broken pieces that they had distributed on the ground, or left laying on the ground, those litter bugs. But you have to remember, this wasn't wrapped in aluminum foil. It wasn't wrapped in plastic wrap. It was just a piece of bread you were eating, and you had all you want, and you just tossed it on the ground. So the ants and the birds could eat it. All of it was biodegradable, for all of you who are politically correct. But there was 12 baskets full taken up, and Jesus had them to pick it up. Not because he was trying to be neat, but to show what was done. And to show exactly what had occurred. Why is this important? Because we're about to read about the storm. And in the book of Mark, Mark in chapter 6 and verse 52 says this about the storm. They had not understood about the loaves. What did they not understand? What is there about the loaves that they didn't get? And I don't know that I know completely. But I wanted you to see the connection. And I want your minds to be engaged with what was it? What was it that the disciples didn't get? And if they had have gotten it, they wouldn't have reacted the way they did in this storm. And so we go from there to the storm. If you look in the account that is given to us in the book of Matthew chapter 14, and it starts in verse 22. The only one who records that Peter walked on the water is Matthew, a fellow apostle, one of the other guys in the boat. John, also one of the other guys in the boat, does not record it, but Matthew does. The interesting thing is that the book that seems to be the most influenced by Peter is the book of Mark. Mark was not an apostle, but he was a young man that traveled with Jesus and the apostles. He was a young man that was with Paul and Barnabas. And there's a strong connection, historically and otherwise, between Peter and Mark. But Mark doesn't say a word about it. He doesn't mention the fact that Peter walked on the water. Neither does John, neither does Mark. Mark chapter 6 and verse 48 adds something for us that helps us to understand and set the picture of the situation with the disciples in the storm. Now, if you remember, the way this all happened, that after they had fed the 5,000, Jesus told the disciples to head on back. So they get into the boat to head across the sea to go back to where they came from. The reason they were here was to get away from the crowd, because Jesus had heard John the Baptizer had been beheaded by Herod. And because John had been beheaded, Jesus wanted to be away by himself for a while. The disciples had come back from a limited commission, and he wanted to take them away so that they could rest. So they went to a place where they could be alone, and the 5,000 followed them. And they were not alone. And when Jesus saw that crowd of people following him, instead of being angry or upset, he had compassion on them. And he wanted to give them something to eat before they went away. Well, now he sent the disciples away, and he stays behind in order to send the crowd away. And then he spends some time in prayer. And then he looks out and he sees the storm and the disciples caught in the middle of the storm. And there's a statement made by Mark about something else Jesus saw. And Mark 6:48 says he saw the disciples straining at the oars. They had been traveling now for some time and had only gone a distance of about 3 or 4 miles, making no headway at all, because after they had started, the storm hit, and it was almost leaving them without motion. It was taking every effort they could make to keep them going backwards, and they were not making very much headway at all going forward. And so Jesus says, or rather Mark tells us, that Jesus saw the disciples straining at the oars. The word straining is interesting. And there it is, straining at the oars. One of the Greek dictionaries says this: the word straining that is used in this text strictly means rub on the touchstone. And it has reference to a Lydian stone used to test the genuineness of metals. Hence the test, or make proof of anything. They would use this stone to see if a metal was genuine, or if it was something that was impure and not what it ought to be, and therefore would not withstand. It is used of bodily disease, and in that sense is sometimes translated torment, or to cause great pain. To be passive, it means to be in great pain. Passive means not something being done to me, but something that I'm doing to myself or is occurring to me. It also has reference in a passive sense of birth pains, to suffer pain, to be in anguish. And those translations are all from this same word that is used for straining. Figuratively, of any severe distress, afflict, torment, or to be harassed. In other words, more than just working hard, the disciples were in pain. More than just working hard, their muscles were being stretched beyond their ability. And they were in torment and trying to keep this boat moving forward. And they weren't able to do it. And so here comes Jesus, walking across the sea in the middle of the storm. And according to Mark, and according to John, he's about to walk by the boat. That would have been an interesting thing. What is that? Where's he going? Hey, take us with you. But the disciples saw him, and they are terrified. And Peter says to him, "Lord, if it's you, let me come to you. And Jesus says, come to me. And so Peter steps out of the boat and he starts walking toward Jesus. But then his attention is affixed on the waves and the wind. And he takes his attention off Jesus. And when he does, he begins to sink. And Jesus takes him, picks him up, puts him back into the boat, and says to him, O you of little faith. It's amazing to me that as we grow up, and when we're taught this story in Bible school, and when we think about this study, the thing we think about with regard to Peter is he's the guy that has such little faith. But he's the only guy that had enough faith to get out of the boat. And he's the only guy that had enough faith to walk on the water. And other than Jesus, he is the only one to ever walk on the water. So, if that is what Jesus says about Peter, oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? What would he have said to the other guys? You guys of no faith? You guys who don't believe at all? Paul will later on talk about the amazement of little faith. If I have a little faith, even the smallest grain of faith, I can say to this mountain, be removed, and it'll be removed. And all that fits in with what's happening here. The others, too busy with the boat, straining to keep the boat from going backwards. Have they stopped paddling? Are they still straining? Have they let it go? Are they now angry that Peter's getting out of the boat and now they've got to be the ones to paddle without him helping? Are they too busy with the boat? And if they are too busy with the boat, why? You got Jesus walking on the water in the storm, making headway beside them. And they're focused on the boat. And the boat's where they want to stay. Is it fear? Fear of the water? Fear of the waves? Where's their trust? Where's their dependence? Is it in the boat? Is it in this thing that they are in? Where's their trust? Where's their dependence? Peter has enough faith to get out of the boat to go to Jesus. But not enough faith to keep from being distracted by the things that are going on around him. And when all the things that are going on around him are overwhelming to the point he cannot ignore them, or he chooses not to ignore them, then he begins to sink. And then Jesus says, oh, you of little faith. Didn't stay focused. They didn't understand about the loaves. Mark chapter 6 and verse 52. If they didn't understand about the loaves, what is it they didn't understand? Is it Jesus? Do we do any better? If they didn't understand about Jesus, let's ask some questions. How much did he need to feed the 5,000? How much food did he have available to feed the 5,000? Could he have done it with one fish and three loaves? Could he have done it with a piece of meat hanging off of a bone and a pinch, sort of like you take the Lord's Supper? Could he have fed the 5,000 with that if he just had that? Suppose he had nothing. Could he have fed the 5,000? And we all know he could. So why the two fish and the five loaves? Is it to emphasize him with us and us with him? That whatever we have plus Jesus is more than enough. whatever I have available, whatever talents I have, whatever abilities I have, whatever opportunities I have, whatever I have in Jesus is more than enough. But without Jesus, if I had everything, it wouldn't be enough. But with Jesus, whatever little I have, plus Him, is more than enough. He is the bread of life, not this planet, not the fact that there are fish in the sea, not the fact that there are cattle on the hills, not the fact that there's wheat growing in the field, and from that we can mix it with water and make bread. He is the bread of life. They didn't get that yet. They didn't get that He is the resurrection and the life. Oh, I know my brother will be raised, Lord, on that day. On the day of resurrection, he will be raised. And Jesus said, I am the resurrection and the life. They didn't get that yet. They didn't get the fish yet. They didn't get the storm yet. They didn't get the resurrection from the dead yet. That it is Him. He is the way, the truth, and the life. Let me tell you who got it. All the apostles did eventually. The apostle Paul expresses it. I can do all things through Him who strengthens me. Now let me tell you what that means. And check your faith to see if you believe it. There is not a marriage that cannot be a great marriage and cannot be saved if both couples listen to Jesus. There is not an addiction that cannot be overcome if we submit to Jesus. There is not a problem in life that you face that cannot be faced and lived through and maintain joy and peace if we listen to Jesus, if we submit to Him. This is not about the power of positive thinking. This is not about mind over matter. This is not about if I believe strong enough, I can walk across the water. It's me and trusting Jesus. And when I trust Jesus, there is not a situation in this world I will face that I cannot go through nor overcome and maintain joy and peace and flourish with joy and peace if I submit to Jesus, I listen to Him, and I trust Him because He is everything. He's not controlled by anything in this world. He controls everything in this world. He's not supplied by anything in this world. He supplies everything in this world. That's the story of the loaves and the fishes, which the disciples hadn't gotten when they were caught in the middle of the storm. And we so often we don't get when we're caught up in the middle of life and all the things that are going on around us. I don't care what it is that's bothering you or troubling you or has you brought down or causing you to feel overwhelmed. With every single one of us, if we get out of the boat, whatever it is we're depending on and trusting in, and listen to Him and follow Him, problems aren't going to go away. They're not going to disappear. The storm wasn't taken away. Not until after he got in the boat. But you can go through every storm and walk through everything. If you know Him, you trust Him, you listen to Him, you believe Him. No matter what happens. you will still maintain joy and peace and go to eternal life. That's why it is absolutely imperative that we put our trust in Jesus Christ, that we believe Him, that we listen to Him, that we obey Him. Have you put Him on in baptism? Are you walking with Him? Do you need to make your life right with Him? If you need to respond to His invitation, we want to offer it to you as together we stand and as we sing.